You are listening to Chaos Springs Eternal, a Delta Green actual play, brought to you by Quartermasters of the Tabletop. This is Season 1, City of Woe. Delta Green, by its nature, deals with violent themes and disturbing imagery, as well as horrors beyond our comprehension. Now, if you're one of those people who don't mind comprehending some horrors from time to time, I think you'll have a good time listening here. Join us, won't you? Hello, and welcome back to Chaos Springs Eternal, Season 1, City of Woe. We ended up last episode on a bit of a cliffhanger, but we're going to start this one on maybe an even bigger cliffhanger, question mark? And that is by asking, what is your first tabletop role-playing game experience? I'm going to go first on this one because my first TTRPG experience was with Noah.
What? It was?
I think I've told you this before, but
I know
this I kind of lied to you when you put out a looking for group type of thing, you know, asking for players. And I don't remember if you like asked specifically what our experience was, but I was just like, at that point, I had listened to a bunch of tabletop role-playing games, and I really wanted to play one.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just like, I'm going to say anything to get whatever you want me to do, I will jump through whatever hoops. I just want to play one game.
Literally a fucking addiction. Literally an addiction.
I don't know if this can qualify as an addiction because, I mean, I devote I devote a lot of time and even money to this. All of my friends, you know,
looks at Hero Lab for Pathfinder 1E. Looks at Hero Lab for Pathfinder 1E.
All of my closest friends are involved in this, and it eats a lot of time, takes me away from my family. Actually, you know what? Now that I'm talking about it,
yeah, although, buddy,
should we quit? Should we just be done?
No.
No, that's what a quitter would say.
That's what a quitter would say.
Keep taking, we'll hit gold.
Right. Mama didn't raise no quitter.
That's every right. Gambler inevitably quits right before they hit the jackpot. So. Statistically, they've shown that if you just keep playing just like a couple more spins after you quit, you win the jackpot.
Just one more hand. One more hand.
But the problem is, so the issue with that is if you're like, well, I got to pretend to quit so I will win, the universe will know that you're not actually wanting to quit.
Oh, no.
Win. Tyler, I really need you to bring it back to the subject at hand, which is, what was your first tabletop experience?
Hold on. You didn't even explain what you played with Noah.
Oh, yeah. We played
Checkers.
Doofus.
Crypt of the Everflame in Pathfinder 1E.
That was your first experience?
That was my first experience.
God, no wonder Oles fucking sucked.
I quit.
Oles was fantastic.
For the record, he did not suck. He was a very great character.
He was a really good character.
Fucking incredible.
All I remember from that is going in there and seeing your character art that you had for Oles and being like, this is the group for me.
Who was it who did that character art?
I can't remember. But I remember being like,
I'm blanking. I don't think it was Irene Campos, but it was Zellart, I think is her name. Xelart.
No. I'm not talking about the character art. I'm talking about the placeholder you had. It was some, I can't remember.
Orlando Bloom.
Oh. It was, yeah. It was some like British fop that you had found.
No, that was, the Scarlet Pimpernel.
That's right.
It was, yes.
Well, because that was the whole thing, is that I was a swashbuckler, and I very much based him on the Scarlet Pimpernel. He's one of my favorite characters in all of media.
Was a mother's boy.
Oh, yeah. Big mama's boy. You know, sort of like a lawful stupid type of good.
The number one moment in my mind of Oles was right before another player was going to get the final blow on a skeleton champion. Him asking, I have this move called parry and riposte. Can I parry his attack?
Parry his attack.
Just so I go next and get the last hit.
Well, because he played the swashbuckler archetype that only got back
The inspired blade,
He only got back the grit points or whatever the grit point equivalent
panache.
Was.
Panache.
He only got back panache if he killed somebody, and I hadn't killed like anybody. So I was like, this guy's about to die. Can I do this?
He just kill stealing in the middle of everything.
It was incredible, truly.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was my first experience. Tyler, what was your first tabletop experience?
My first tabletop experience was
TTRPG.
I figured as much. actually, I think it's still the same answer. I think about it. My first tabletop RPG experience was right after a girl I was dating had just dumped me out of the blue. And she gave me that whole, like, oh, well, you're just too good for me excuse. And I'm like, bitch, why don't the fuck you mean my nut? And I was distraught. Just like, she's, I'm too perfect for people or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And some homies were like, hey, we're playing this thing called Pathfinder. If you want to try this. And I was like, yeah, sure. Fuck it. I don't know what this is. And they kept calling it 3.8. I'm like, D&D 3.8? I'm like, I don't know what the fuck that means. I'm just gonna keep, okay, I'll just make a character. And they put me in front of a PC for the character gen PC gen, if you know what that is.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just basically an Excel sheet for character creation for Pathfinder.
Horrible amalgamation of
code. Yeah, it was awful.
Code.
Yeah. It was awful, but
that shit was like, free. That shit was free.
It was free.
Free.
It was free, and it worked most of the time, but I made a half-orc hunter named Harmon, because alliteration is fun, and it was just me and a bunch of my boys from high school that I'm still friends with, and it was in just a homebrew world. I was like, I thought I was going to be the cleverest, or like so interesting. I was like, oh, he's a hunter from a land where there's a lot of werewolves, and he has alchemical silver bastard sword and arrow tips, and he survived. He's the last person that survived, and he made his way here, and now he's, you know, like, oh, all my friends are dead, push me to the edge, all that stuff. And I got fucking clowned on so
as
hard,
you should,
as both in game and by my homies, as I should. But you know what, sometimes it's fun to be that, to just be the stereotype. Anyways, but yeah, the actual adventure was go down under the city. There's like a goblin camp that what used to be a goblin camp that got cleared out, but now it got renovated into a game show by a demon. And like, we were all teleported into our own individual like corridors that we had to go through, and there were different challenges, and I couldn't beat mine. Because I didn't know what the fuck I was doing with Pathfinder, and I said, that sounds fun, and I built it, and it was awful. I couldn't hit anything, and I was getting choked out by a choker, and I couldn't I couldn't stop anything, because I had 10 strength, and my wolf was not there.
Mark, what about you? When did you start playing tabletop games? Was it with Gary Gygax himself?
You're hilarious.
Jesus fucking Christ, just call him out.
And no, it was with actually Jesus fucking Christ.
Oh, I knew it.
No.
That's why we... Yep.
That's why we're the... Yep. My first tabletop RPG experience was in my friend John Reed. Shout out to John if you're listening. You're a doctor now. Good for you. He ran a Dark Sun Advanced Dungeons and Dragons campaign for me and all of our friends. He was very into Dark Sun. He read all the novels. And then he ran us through, oh man, I can't even remember what they were called. It was something about the kings. I can't remember. But anyway, it was really cool. Dark Sun is one of my favorite worlds. I love playing in that. I was sadly not able to play in the one that Noah ran a while ago. But that was my first experience, and I created a Thrycreen. His name was Kajentian, and he was a Psionist. He was of the Psionist class. And then we did everything else. I played Planescape. I played Eberron. I played all that stuff, in addition to werewolf, vampire, and all the other things. So that was my first launching off point, was Dark Sun in the basement of my friend John's house.
Did you ever play Mutants and Mastermind?
No, I did not. But okay. I did play, I was trying to think of the name of it. I played El Kadim, which was like a genie kind of thing that they had back in the day.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was a really cool kind of thing. But yeah, then we branched out and we did the whole White Wolf stuff for a while, which was fun. But I'll never forget my first experience. It was amazing.
It was amazing. They say you never forget your first.
Yeah, it was really fun. And it really, it made, the one thing I always tell people that always, because back in the day, the people were like, oh, you play Dungeons and Dragons. It's very much more popular now. I was like, that is where I get all my creativity from. Like, that is the one thing. If you want to be creative, play these type of games and you'll get better at it.
I agree.
The most impressive thing about that is that you started with AD&D and didn't quit immediately.
Yeah, no, it was a fun system. There was a lot of options. Like, I like a lot of options. Like Pathfinder, I tried to get back into 5e when I got back into it after like 20 years or so. I tried to play 5e and it just didn't scratch that itch for me. But then I heard about Pathfinder. And then my first Pathfinder game was Crimson Throne with this crazy group that I lasted like 2 episodes. We played 18th level Pathfinder characters. Oh. And then I played a game with Noah and Dan and some other people. And that was my first like, okay, this is something I can sustain. So,
and yeah. Noah, I assume that you've been running Iron Gods since time began.
I was actually there when they were writing it at Paizo, and I was just slowly sitting in the corner, subtly like chanting out plot events that could happen, like the Oracle of Delphi,
right.
And they didn't use any of those, right?
No, her they threw it all in the trash. They said, shut the fuck up. They tried to swap me with a fly swatter and, like, Gollum, I hit into the ceiling
panel. Security, panels. He got back in somehow.
Honestly, my first experience was playing Pathfinder First Edition. Much like Mark's, actually, it was a higher level than I probably should have been comfortable playing.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, I was like, I've heard one of my friends talk about TTRPGs a lot. I want to play one. D&D seems neat, but Pathfinder seems like it has a glut of options. And I love choice paralysis, inflicting it upon myself. And when one of my friend's friends was offering to run a game with like, oh yeah, Sky Pirates, like, oh, that sounds really cool, we'll be flying a vessel and be attacking other vessels and we'll be starting at high level, cool, I have a bunch of pocket change, I can buy some cool shit. Oh, you're allowing race building, an actual term where you had your original ancestry that you chose from the game,
mm-hmm.
and then you had an allotment of extra points,
yep.
up to like 27 to just buy extra shit, and you could slap on templates onto it. And I found one that I was like, oh, cool, I'm going to play a Gorin Oracle of Nature, like a little tree boy. His whole thing is going to be, at this level I get a ability called Undo Artifice. I could fly over to the enemy vessel, slap their engine, and they fall out of the sky because it restores their engine parts to material components. We never fought another flying vessel in the entire game.
Was that with Omega?
Yeah.
That's the one I joined in on. Remember that? Right at the very end.
No, that was the one after that.
Was it?
Yes, that was. I believe.
I remember there being a Sky Pirate thing, but okay.
Maybe. There was also the one you're thinking of might have been the Cobalt airship that flew, that crashed down, and we, for some reason, needed to go out there and collect parts.
I don't remember. I'm going to be honest.
I remember
so many years, and I don't remember what I had for lunch 6 hours ago. So
the thing that did stick with me was the fact that Pathfinder has so many fucking options, and I stuck with it because I knew this is a good game system, and it can be at the time. It was the best game system that I knew of at the time that I enjoyed playing. And thank goodness that Pathfinder 2e is out, because I prefer that so much more.
I do feel really lucky that in my first game, I got Noah as my GM, and Mark was there.
Yeah, thank fuck he was there.
Yeah, and I had done the same thing that Dan had done and sent out like a little questionnaire. You were like, how much have you been playing? Blah, 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 blah. And I remember being super pumped to find a game. Being like, yeah, this is like being 15 again. So
I scrolled up to our original DMs, and it's the difference between, I think every time I collect new players, it's a case of just like, I go through the first one, I send a bunch of shit, and then it's just kind of like, all right, I'll start being more professional and asking the next person, and I'll be more professional the next person, and then because the difference between the DMs to Dan and Mark are pretty funny.
Okay, so when I say I played a cleric and sword and board fighter, I'm seeing this DM that you sent. I think I had built those characters.
Yep.
And I had played against myself where I just picked a monster.
Oh.
Hey, listen. I was very lonely. Literally none of my friends play Dungeons & Dragons or Pathfinder.
Yeah. Hey, wait a second.
Well, same with mine.
None of the ones that I have met in person. There's one, but now it's like every time I talk to him, he always goes back and tells me the exact same story about one of his D&D campaigns where he got to do something cool. And I don't know 5e that well, but I'm like 95% sure that what he's describing is not even like possible in the loosest possible interpretation of the rules.
I love it when people just make shit up like that, because it's like, because you know enough to be like, you either have a really cool DM or you're just yanking my chain, buddy.
Yeah. So every once in a while, I'm like, I do want to run, like, I love Delta Green and I would love to run it for more people. But I don't have time, first off. But secondly, finding other people who are interested in it is very...
I've done it.
I know you've done
it. You've done it a lot.
I'm collecting people.
It's your gift, bud. Like, that is... Yeah. If you have one talent, it's getting people who will let you run a game for them.
I think your talent also, Noah, is that you find people that you don't know who will let you run a game.
I mean,
and that is astonishing. I've done one...
I go through a lot of people. I'm going to be... I go through a lot of people.
Yeah, I've done one... like totally random DM. He was good. I don't complain. I don't have any complaints about him, but it just wasn't my style. But
I remember after playing some with Noah in these games, and Noah was like, yeah, I run this game and this game. And I'm like, why am I not in those games? Like, do you not like
I
me?
Know. The like, longest time I was like, I be in those games? I was like, why didn't I get an invite to Iron Gods? Yeah. Never got one. Everybody else is in it.
Then eventually I got Iron Gods, and then I left.
And then I left too.
Dude, I have a homie in my IRL games that is like that, or he's not necessarily like that, but he's always like, yeah, I just want to play more RPGs. And I'm like, there is a number you hit, and you're like, this is too many. this is too many. He's like, there is no number for me. I was like, all right, we'll see about that.
There is a number. There is a number. I've hit it multiple times. I think I've increased my gap. I think I've increased my ceiling.
You do the thing with your Sailor Kings where you just increase your influence.
I'm stress training.
You're grinding that skill cap, Noah.
Eventually, the day's going to come where I can run a game, get a 30-minute gap, run a game, get a 30-minute gap, run a game, go to sleep.
Well, what you guys don't know is that Noah is currently running an Iron Gods game.
That's why you mute
by post. Sorry, no. right now,
play by post.
No joke. I am running three consecutive ones. I had to can one of them because it was in Pathfinder 1E.
But speaking of tabletops, Joel is about to be tabletopped across this banister.
God, he's broken in half.
Unless he manages to beat his sister in a contested let's see, what would be the contested role here? I'm gonna search the Delta Green Agent's Handbook for banister.
Oh my god!
Let's see, anything? Every once in a while, you get something. Nope. I don't know what.
I feel like this is a classic dodge example.
Yeah, there's. We don't have dodge though. This isn't Call of Cthulhu.
I'm looking right at it.
Are you looking at dodge? We have.
He
dodge.
Literally.
Yeah, we have dodge.
Between disguise and drive, sir.
Okay, so if you have dodge, What should she be rolling? That's, I mean, I guess.
I don't think she should be rolling at all. I think she should just take a fumble, I think, guys, right?
I guess unarmed combat?
Yeah, maybe.
I would say either unarmed combat or athletics.
But I would say, because didn't she come up to you and try to give you a hug as like in a disguise?
He failed the human check.
He did fail the human, so.
So I would say she would do it at a plus.
Yeah, I would say she gets a bonus. Yeah, definitely.
Okay,
yeah.
So the base plus unarmed 5%? Combat is 40%. I'm going to give her plus 20. It's a pretty. I think it's a.
That's fair.
How tall is Joel?
What did I have written down? He is
10 feet tall, right?
Yeah, he's about 6'6". No, I'm kidding.
Okay. If he was 10 feet tall, I would give her a plus 40. But
he's like 5'9", 5'10".
Okay. Let's just call it a plus 10. So she's got a 40, so now she's working with a 50.
Okay.
And so this is Price is Right rules. Closest without going over.
All right.
Ooh, okay, she did pretty good. It's a...
I got a 25 under 30, and she got a 46.
She beat you by 1 percentage point.
Under 50.
I beat her by 1.
Man. Yeah, that 10% made a difference, though. What do you mean beat her by 1?
Yeah, she beat you by 1. She's within 4. You're within 5.
Well, it's not... she just got a 46. So that's higher than the 25.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
So, she wins this contested strength roll.
Oh, that's what you're trying to say. Okay, gotcha.
And with this, you and her both go tottering over. We've looked up the falling rules before. This is going to be a little bit different than those times because...
Falling a little further.
Is she tackling him into the hole at the bottom floor?
No, so that is... under she would be tackling him more into the middle. She would have had to be running and like spear him. So this is actually going to be less bad because of first off you're landing on sort of I wouldn't say a yielding surface, but you're not landing on a wet bar. Secondly, you have the banister. Not the barrister. There's not some courtroom guy.
There's an advocate here.
Yes.
Oh my god! It all comes back.
You're going through the banister, or at least over top it, so enough to slow you down. And then you're both sort of intertwined. So the fact that you're intertwined, you know, you landing on her landing on you, it's going to sort of be less bad. But, you know, fall from a short distance, 1 to 3 meters does 1d6 or 2d6 if it's particularly uncontrolled. So, I mean, 3 meters, that's what, 9 feet, 10 feet? That seems about right here. So you and Clementine are both going to take 1d6. I think that is what I'm going to settle on. Okay, Clementine takes 2 points of damage. You want to roll your figure roll separately?
Yeah, I can do that.
That way you could potentially roll 6 and be much worse off.
I got a 4.
Right, 4. So, I mean, not by no means, you know, the most lethal, but a pretty hefty chunk of damage.
Yeah.
So,
I'm down to 10. No biggie.
Yeah, you and her have landed on this floor, and she rolls over, looks at you, and says... I'm supposed to be here, Joel. This is where I belong.
What floor are we on now? I'm sorry. We're on the first floor?
Yep. You're back on the first floor. The hole is over to your like right-ish.
He lands with a oof and looks over at her and like painfully sits up. And he will wrestle her basically up and out the front door.
Okay. Yeah, she's actually not resisting you in this case. But when you go through this sort of front area, when you attempt to push/pull her out the front, it is as if there's some sort of invisible barrier preventing her from leaving.
Oh, god damn
it. I fucking knew it. I knew it. She failed that roll when the spirit touched her. This dumb bitch is possessed. He doesn't. He's like, stop playing. Come on, get through the door.
And without even like straining, you know, she's like, I can't leave, Joel. This is where I belong. I have to be here.
I assume Marcy is coming down the stairs at this point.
Yeah, I think when your sister pushed you off the ledge, she screamed, Joel, what the fuck? Or Clementine, what the fuck?
And coming up the stairs is definitely Detective Marr.
We'll just run over and just be like, what the fuck happened? What happened?
What's going on here?
Joel is like a cartoon character, like has her by one hand and is just pulling as hard as he can out the front door, but Clementine is just standing perfectly still. There's something wrong with Clementine and I can't... Someone give her a push!
Yeah, looks at you, says like, okay. And he attempts to push her out the front. And is unable to, as if she is blocked up against some like invisible like fence. And he starts to look very concerned.
And, what the hell is going on?
Joel will let go. You said you saw something touch her, right, Marcy?
I saw a hand touch her shoulder before I let her downstairs. It didn't seem like Marguerite's.
Whatever is in here, other than Marguerite.
Fuck, I said the name.
Listen, we're already in the shit. Just say it. Marguerite. I'll say it into a mirror 3 times.
She makes a face like, don't you fucking dare.
I think something's in Clementine.
She says, no, I'm supposed to be here. This is where I belong.
You belong at home, in front of a TV, watching some bullshit, eating chips or whatever. I don't care. Not here. Anywhere but here.
The detective is stepping in and out of the front door and then trying to pull Clementine through, and he is looking very concerned.
Joel's just watching it and just like, yeah, I mean,
he looks at you and he's like, okay, maybe you guys weren't just tired.
Like, he does, like the head shake, and, like, his eyes go wide, like, giving, like, a, yeah, fucking think, like, motion, like, both with his hands, like, wide, like, spreading them out. Like, yeah, of course, I'm telling you, there's some weird shit going on. He'll turn back to Clementine. Who am I talking to right now?
It's me, Joel. It's Clementine, your sister.
All right.
Marcy quickly tests the barrier and passes the threshold and just stays on the other side like, I'm not going back in there.
You two watch her real quick, and Joel will go downstairs, grab the salt, come back up. He will poke a hole in the bag and put a little half circle around her.
She dances around it and does not allow you to do that.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Salt fight.
Okay, he will... He'll... back out to this other room where the hole is. So there's like a, she's currently in like a like an open foyer, if you will.
Anywhere you go around, she is going to start dodging around you.
Can I grab onto her?
You can make an unarmed combat, and actually the detective is going to see this happening and be like,
can I aid him? Help.
Yeah, sure.
Because I imagine his is better than my straight 40%.
Yeah, so in Delta Green, there's not strictly like an aiding rule, but we've just done it where like, oh, if you roll and succeed, you can give someone like a little bonus.
Okay. Sorry, I forgot that.
No, that's fine. I've always sort of home ruled that. Wow.
Oh my god, a 39 under 40.
Wow, good job.
I did not expect that.
And he gets his with a 56 under 60. And so y'all have restrained Clementine. And she begins to thrash and against this restraining. And her voice changes some. And she says, I belong here, Joel. You have to let me stay.
Joel, pour the fucking salt. Joel, pour the fucking salt.
Put her against a corner. I don't want her going anywhere, especially not down a hole.
Okay. And they reposition her around
when she's
here.
In the corner, Joel will, again, like, from, like, to the wall, all the way against the wall,
in like a semicircle around her. Pour the salt.
Yeah, as you are doing this and she is restrained, her screams and yells become just more like distorted, to the point where it sounds like she's, I mean, it just like sounds like she's in a tunnel or maybe underwater, just like the way that it's affecting, just and then it just sort of gets sort of that muted, like,
hey, should we make, like, I don't know, sanity checks for that?
Yeah. Yeah, everyone's going to need to make sanity checks, including Cyril, now that he's come out of, up out of the basement.
What about the officer?
Yes, the officer is also going to have to make...
Yeah, I'm going to be recording this, if possible, by the way.
Sure. Oh, the officer passes.
Holy shit, 23 under 56.
I also got a pass, 60 under 66.
I also passed, so 12 under 74.
We are on point this session, fuck yeah.
We are steeled.
Okay, everyone's taking just 1 point of sanity damage here. No breaking points, right?
No.
Nope.
All right, fine.
You're not a cop. I don't have to tell you anything.
I am.
You also don't have to tell the cops anything.
Yeah. True.
And the officer.
You're not a lawyer.
Holding her against the wall is just like, finish the circle. Finish it.
I love that he is still just like on board. Like,
he's like fully on board just, now.
Joel, finish it as best he can.
Okay. And as you finish it, gosh, did not think that this was going to happen. But as you finish it, her moans and yells begin to fade, and then she collapses, and her clothes are left, and she is gone.
No way. No fucking way.
And now I'm going to need everyone to make another sanity check.
Hell yeah, it does.
Success. 57 under 73.
The detective fails?
I somehow passed. 45 under 65.
These are both against an unnatural. And so this is going to be a 1d4.
67 over 56.
Okay,
Oh, it should be 55. It should be 55.
Okay. The detective failed with a 61. Cyril, Joel both passed. Marcy passed. So you three take.
No, Marcy one. Failed.
The detective takes. Oh, Marcy failed. So the detective takes 2. Cyril and Joel take 1. And Marcy, you take 3. So no one's taken a whole bunch.
I am 4 away from my breaking point.
Oh, good to know. yeah.
Make another sanity.
So that happened. The detective looks at you and says, What just happened? What? Where'd she go?
We told you.
Joel is hot. Like, he is 1,000-yard stared.
Cyril has stopped recording and started taking snap photography.
Okay.
Of the body area.
Okay. Yeah, it's just a pile of clothes in the middle of a ring of salt.
And he'll start screaming. Like, I don't think he believes that was actually her right now. And he'll just, like, drop the salt and staring down in the hole, looking up the stairs, running outside, and just, like, screaming, like, Clementine! Clem!
We need to get out of this house. We need to get out of this house. She just frantically runs outside.
Cyril runs downstairs. And he's going to check to see if the room has come back.
As you run downstairs, you don't see the room.
I think that Cyril, he's going to listen to the wall like the cop was doing. Does he hear anything?
Make me a search check.
No, that's a failure. 83 over 50.
Yeah, I mean, you think maybe footsteps, but they're like kind of far in the distance. If it's, I mean, I guess it could be just, I don't know. At this point, it could be foundation settling type of thing. It's just so hard to tell.
What am I in the room with?
You're in the room with the other piano over here, just mm-hmm. some tables and chairs.
Can I rip off a table leg and start trying to bash this wall down?
Sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
I'll just let you do that. You're former military. You've got a little strength, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
Well, not great, actually. I'm pretty weak. I have an eight strength.
Oh, yeah. That's not great at all.
Yeah, that's not great at all.
That's like a 40. You can start. You can start at it. It feels like it's going to take a little while to break through some of this brick and mortar.
Yeah.
But you can start. And while that's happening, upstairs, the detective is still staring at this circle of salt and the pile of clothes where Clementine used to be. And he's searching through it. And he is finding just a pile of clothes in a circle of salt. And he steps outside where Marcy and Joel are.
Joel's still inside.
Oh, okay. So he's sort of gets the distance between Joel and Marcy and says, listen, I have no idea what just happened, but I don't even know where I'm going to start the... How can I... You know... The number one rule about, like, police work is you've got to have the body. I don't know what to do with this. This is above my pay grade. I have no training in this. I have no background in this. This is absolutely crazy. Part of me still wants to believe this is some sort of joke or prank you are pulling on me. I have no idea. But if this is real, then that room is real. So I'm going to go back and tear down that wall.
Joel will corner him as best he can.
Okay, he's a pretty intimidating dude. He's, you know, I've said he's like 6'2", 240.
Yeah, I...
Brolin lookalike.
That's fair. I get that. Joel will, like... I think Joel's just mad.
Yeah.
And yeah, no.
Sure. He's like, I don't give a fuck what you put in your goddamn report. You're going to help me find my... fucking sister. She's in this building somewhere right now. Okay,
well, if odds are she's
what? She's what?
If anything is going to help answer the strangeness, it's going to be that room that disappeared, right? So let's find that room.
Fine.
Because last time I checked, it still has to be there. And so he goes out to his car and grabs... let's see, he probably wouldn't have a shovel, but he's got like a hammer. He
probably has like a breaker bar, like for his car.
His breaker bar. Yeah, absolutely. Or even like a crowbar, that sort of thing. And so he's going to go in and he's going to go down and he's going to join Cyril in attacking this wall.
They usually have first aid kits, dressing, fire extinguishers, naloxone kits.
This is his personal
vehicle. Oh, his personal car, sorry.
Yeah. So, and as this happens, Joel and Marcy, you hear more sirens in the distance.
Yeah, Marcy is outside at the car, just rocking back and forth.
Reasonable.
Joel will grab the salt bag again one last time, and he will put just a line right up the front door.
Okay.
Obviously things can't leave here anyways, but I don't think he's thinking fully rationally at this point, and it's just nothing's leaving.
Okay, as you do that, you hear and you feel like a little presence around you, and then you hear just a whisper that says, that's not gonna be enough. You have to fix it.
If I spin around real quick, is there anyone there?
Make an alertness roll.
Yeah, 20 under 40.
Okay, so as you spin around, what you notice is just a ghostly hand on your shoulder. It appears to be a sort of slender, feminine hand.
Adult,
yep.
Who are you?
You hear the voice just says, you know who I am. You know my name. And then it's sort of that feeling and that presence fades.
Joel will march down the stairs at that.
Okay. And they are working on the wall. After just a few short minutes, enough time that... okay, we're going to have to, like, run two things at once because, Marcy, you see other police pull up in the next 5 minutes. And then over this next 5 minutes, they're working on the wall. And they begin to find a hole. And in that hole, there is air. You feel like a distinct breeze.
In that 5 minutes as well, can Joel have got the journal or the book from Cyril?
Yeah.
And go back trying to find that name.
Yeah. As you search through that, you find that the name of the woman who was one of Layla's favorite, nanny would probably be the best description, / housekeeper, / general help. Was Colette.
Colette. And when he reads that, he'll just whisper it, Colette.
And you, like, feel a breeze. And maybe it's from the underground room, but maybe not.
What are we looking at in this hole?
Well, as you open up enough of the hole, you can kind of shine a flashlight through it. Get your eyes in, and you see sort of the room. But this time, there is no thing on the floor. There is a table, but there's nothing on the table. So ignore the room art.
Mm-hmm.
Is that circle still there? Like, where his made from his intestines? Like, is there a blood stain?
Nope. As you may recall, it was a bloodless body. The circle, I can't remember if I said the made circle was made of blood or not, but the circle is not there.
Well, you said it was made of, like, his entrails, so I was just curious if it was exsanguinated in there or prior to, my question.
No. Probably would have been prior to your...
Well,
I should have checked your criminology. That's too much information to give you. No.
Well, here's the room we was talking about, but there's no body in there.
And... He says, yeah, that's odd, but the fact that you knew there was a room here means something.
Mm-hmm.
And the after other thing, what just happened, that means something.
Yeah, the other thing is that far wall, I also felt and heard people shuffling behind, and it felt warm. So we may be at this a while, because I think there's something behind that wall as well. Well, maybe something's just constantly moving a barrier around. I don't know. But it would be worth a look. But it's not, the body's not in there anymore. It was laying there on the floor with its entrails, like, sprawled all around it. And there was stuff on the table.
Yeah, no, we'll keep taking this wall down. And at that point, two more policemen, both in CSI jackets, make their way down, and they say, well, detective, what's going on here? He says, okay, officers, this is a long story short, there's a room behind this wall, we're getting into it. They saw a body, I saw a body disappear. It's been a long day. We're breaking down this wall. And they're like, okay. He's like, you have any, like, shovels or something? Or, like, a sledgehammer? Well, we can go get one. Would that be okay? Yeah, that's fine. Go get that. And, we'll just continue working here. Okay. Detective, you want us to call something in? He says, no, I need to go talk to the chief about all of this before we... It's a long story. Go get a sledgehammer. And they nod and head back and pass Marcy.
Don't touch the salt.
Okay, well, won't touch the salt. And they step over it as they make their way out and drive back into town for a couple sledgehammers.
I gotta go all the way back to town for one.
Yeah, you know, not something they keep in their car.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I think that's a good thing, actually, that police don't just carry sledgehammers.
Yeah, it's probably a good thing, for sure.
Although that seems like the basis of, like, a post-apocalyptic type of, you know, escape from New York type of thing.
True.
It's like, where it's like, all the police carry sledgehammers.
They're the hammer of the law.
Here's your registered hammer.
There's, in Texas, there's Jim Adler, the Texas lawyer, and he calls himself the hammer, I think. Or maybe that's a different guy, but the insurance, car insurance in Texas has the weirdest, like, characters who sell car insurance, or like, oh no, he doesn't do car insurance. Gosh, I'm getting tired. He does, he does like hammer accident safety. He yeah, does like accidents.
The
so
Texas get, like, hammer.
The Texas, I'm Jim Adler, the Texas hammer.
Yeah,
that's the guy. What
a fucking badass name, though.
Oh, yeah, and now his son's in it, too. So, like, I used to see these commercials in high school, and now his son is a lawyer, and he works for his dad. And so
that's fucking wild.
There's like my son, the ball peen hammer.
I call him that because he came from my balls pine and my peen.
My ball peen hammer. Oh man,
I needed that. Tink Tink, thank you. I mean, Tyler, oh gosh, this has been such a serious night with so many serious things.
It really has.
I really needed that. Thank you.
That was like a ball peen joke to get the night going.
Oh, yeah. I'm crying. Oh, I can't breathe. What the fuck?
Okay, so where is everybody at this point?
Downstairs for me.
Okay.
If Marcy sees them go downstairs, she's going to assume there's more strength in numbers and regretfully start making her way down, staring at the pile of ashes that used to be Clementine. And
sorry, just, I know I said she collapsed into a pile of ashes, but she just collapsed into her clothes and there's no ashes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was a misspeaking on my part that I thought everyone had just glossed over. I thought it was all okay. Cool.
Nope.
Let's focus on this pile of ashes.
She collapsed as if she were a pile of ashes. You know how you know how like the ashes would just like,
right,
you know, settle.
How many ashes are there?
You know, that's a
good
question.
If I were to collect all the ashes, could I vaguely reassemble them into a Clementine shape?
Mm.
Like, yeah,
there replacements still there?
Hey, Noah, with the right definition of vaguely? Yeah.
Okay, thank you. You're such a great DM allowing me to
do. I know. Just do anything.
Sorry, I'm just going to read the rules on suffocation here real quick.
Marcy does that, and
you don't have to.
Takes her
you don't
to,
have
like,
to. It's okay.
Amusement parks, and it's just like, let me tell you about my best friend.
Oh, please.
Skipping hand in hand.
It's a Ziploc bag with her ashes, but it's got like her face crudely drawn on it.
Yeah. Oh, man.
But again, just so we're all clear, no ashes, just clothes.
Yeah. All right.
That's a weird weekend at Bernie's. Okay.
But yeah, Marcy will make her way downstairs and just kind of stand in a, not in a corner, just near someone.
Joel would actually wave her over real quick.
She will follow. Just in shock and just kind of like stumbling around like, what do we do? I saw them leave.
They're gonna go get sledgehammers. We're knocking down the walls.
Where's... Is the broom open?
They've opened up about like a face-sized hole in the wall.
Is that where Antoine is?
Was still not in there. Nothing is.
Okay.
Listen, more pressing matters here, and he's being a little quiet. Did you find anything about a name Colette? You were searching anything?
Oh my god.
Listen, better question. I know you're better at this than I am. Do you have a way to look for a Colette associated with this manor?
I did. Colette was a tutor who was let go. That
when? Why?
It was something about she made feel special, and she drew illustrations about her. Like it was one of the journals that was thrown at us. It was
This one, and he'll hand her the journal.
Yeah.
No, I need more. I think that's who was talking with, not Clementine. And she's told me that the salt isn't gonna do it. We need to fix this.
Marcy will start making a face in shock, like, they want us to renovate the fucking house or something? Because no, what the fuck are we supposed to fix?
What do you think? And it, like, he'll snap. Like, and then get loud very quickly. Like, what do you think we need to fix? Huh?
I don't fucking know, Joel! I don't fucking know!
We need to fix Marguerite. We need to fix whatever did all of this, whatever killed Antoine, whatever brought all of our shit inside of this house, whatever took your guns.
Fuck.
Whatever made the hole, whatever pushed you down it, whatever left us all the notes. It needs expelled.
The Officer Marr kind of like, after this, you know, outburst between y'all, he turns and looks, he's like, but it seems like they don't have any connection to Antoine. That I don't understand what's going on there.
Are the scratches still on the baseboards?
Yes.
I don't know.
Sorry, do you mean the crown flooring of the floor?
The crown molding of the floor.
The crown molding of the floor. Okay, I just want to make sure we're talking about the right thing.
Yeah.
There's something else. There's got to be something else other than those two here. Or Margarita's not a girl ghost and is a demon. Something like that. And he came here. He was here. I don't understand. It's his family. It's his family's house. There's a lot of power and bloodline.
I know, but I can't help but thinking that maybe they did something. Like
the brothers?
No, the brother's family.
Oh, I think that's evident at this point. Whether
yeah, I know. So maybe all this stuff is to just get people here to solve this cold case or whatever for this Colette, is that her name?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what we're here to do. Is to try to figure out what happened to her, actually. Marguerite may know.
If she'll talk to us anymore.
Well, let's
check it out. I'm going to leave before we do anything like that, okay? I'm going to be out of this room. I'm going to be out of this house. I'm going to be somewhere else, not near that thing.
Marcy? I'm not going to force you into anything. You got to be in here, though.
Fuck you, Joel.
You can't show it fear. If it is anything more than a spirit, any amount of weakness is going to be something it can latch onto, and it's going to beat you. It's going to do whatever it did to Clementine.
I need everyone to make alertness rolls.
Oh, I hate it when they say that.
including Detective Barr.
I almost clicked on accounting.
Success for me, 15 under 60.
Ooh,
Joel quickly doing his taxes.
Okay,
hold on.
84 over 50 for Marcy.
Okay, so I think Marcy is, so it looks like Cyril and Joel and the detective, they all passed, and Marcy failed. And so Marcy's like, I don't know, maybe a little distracted, but Cyril, Joel, and Detective Marr hear something coming from the room. And I think really only Detective Marr and Cyril will have a angle on this with the lighting. But what you see through this, like, again, it's like a head-sized hole at this point that is about, you know, head height, maybe a little bit below, that you have worked through the brick and mortar or whatever sort of retaining wall that is being used here. Looking into this room, the wall on the other side of the room that you had noticed earlier was warm, begins to sort of grow like this sludgy looking mold, and then it like begins to open from the center outwards, and this is like maybe a six and a half foot tall hole, and crouching through this hole you see a strange humanoid with pink gray flesh hanging loosely off its frame, an extended dog-like snout, and these teeth and eyes, and it holds out its hands that have warped into these extra extended long fingers that kind of come together almost like this like hoof-like appearance. And as you've got your flashlights on it, it squeals and meeps and bleats, but it is making some approximation of words, and it says, please, I believe I can be of some help if you all can come with me. And we'll resolve that.
Fuck me, dude.
Next session.
We're just going to follow a Rougarou into a hole? What fuck the hell? Me.
Thanks for tuning in to another week of Chaos Springs Eternal. This is Season 1, City of Woe. If you enjoyed this, please go leave us a rating and review on iTunes. If you do that, make sure you check our email in the show notes, send us a message with your NPC idea, and we'll incorporate that into Care 4. Again, thanks for all the feedback, especially thanks to all the people on the PTBP server. Got a lot of listeners there. Shout out to PTBP, Pretending to Be People. They're great. They're my favorite other Delta Green podcast. Shout out to Arc Dream Publishing. Make sure you go check their website and buy all their stuff, because Delta Green is such a fun game to play. All right, we'll see you next week.
God damn. Oh, also, is my...
Polish that turd. Hey, no! Gosh. Polish that turd, nerd. I love... Oh, man.
You had to say it just so amazing.
Just I had to get that one, yeah, recorded.
I didn't see the countdown.
Well, I told you it was happening.
I didn't see the 5. Four.
No.
Did you see the 3, 2, 1?
No.
Oh, well, I don't know why you had to repeat that then if you
polish those eyes, nerd.
Yeah. Just get just go find one of those floor buffers and just stick your face right in it.
I come back like Smooth SpongeBob.
Yeah, I was gonna say, just you come back and it's just your skull like exposed.
Oh my god, I'm beautiful.